And it's time now for the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campomenosi, former president of the Common Sense Campaign, adjunct professor of political science, and host of this program paid for by an anonymous donor. And good morning, Dr. Lou.
Good morning to you, Laurie. It's certainly good to be on the air once again after another week of all sorts of wonderment going on.
So I'm sure you're going to tell us all about it.
I'm going to try. So that's what, let's get right to it with what I said to you all earlier about the first thing I want to talk about is we're back to Israel. And so let's develop this, and then I'll get into other things that I wanted to talk about, okay?
Sounds good. So, sounds great.
All right. So let's take a look at what has developed over American-Israeli relations over the past week, okay? Now, it's deeper than just a week. And we've talked about all these issues with, you know, Biden and Netanyahu and all the disagreements they've had and how Biden, you know, did not do anything to help the Israelis when it came to a UN resolution about a ceasefire, and we just passed on that. I mean, that's over a month ago. But here you have a situation that I would argue, you know, with continuing problems associated with what Israel wants to do, needs to do with Rafah. I mean, this is so simple that it's very difficult to understand from a rational point of view why there is concern about going into Rafah and doing what is necessary to do what? Take out Hamas. That's what they have to do. That's what Netanyahu has promised he's going to do. That's what the Israeli people want to happen. And 80% of the Americans also support him. So how is it that we have a situation with Biden slow-walking arms ammunition to Israel early in the week? But then yesterday, there's a line in the sand, a red line, and what has happened is they're not just slow walking the ammunition that's necessary, but they have essentially stopped sending it. Now, all of this ammunition is projectiles that are smart type things that will enhance the ability of the Israelis to pinpoint targets instead of just mass destruction weapons, okay? So from the standpoint of collateral damage and stopping civilian casualties, it makes no sense to stop these, you know, this ammunition from being sent. But they have done that. So let's just kind of tease this out a little bit and dig deeper into it. Because on the one hand, I've talked to you all about how there's nothing new about the Obama-Biden relationship with Netanyahu, starting back when Obama sent money and operatives to defeat Netanyahu. And that failed, obviously. But it's left a mark. And as you look carefully at the reasons why Obama was mad at Netanyahu, it's all about the Iranians. Okay, so I'm not going to repeat all of those things about the Iranian relationship with Obama and how all that has just gone on. All right, we know the story, okay? But there is another part of this story that has to do with Biden. And I've really kind of only looked at the Biden relationship with Netanyahu from the standpoint of Biden as vice president, inheriting the Obama, you know, negative feelings towards the Israelis and towards Netanyahu specifically. So you have this situation where Biden, under closer examination, has his own problems with the Israelis, okay? In 1982, there was an issue when he was a senator that popped up between then Prime Minister Begin and Biden, and this went to a point where Biden was telling Senator Biden, "Look, I'm not on my knees begging for your aid, okay? We have 3,000 years of culture behind us. We'll do what we have to do. We're not begging for your aid. I mean, so here you have something that long ago as part of the history of Biden and the Israeli leadership. So is this a contributing factor? It could be. And if it is, it just plays into this whole idea that Biden has been completely out to lunch when it comes to foreign policy issues. I mean, we've been through this before, so I'm not going to repeat it. But when his own Secretary of Defense and CIA Director Gates said that he's been wrong on every foreign policy issue, well, I mean, just look, the most recent one was, as Vice President, he was opposed to getting rid of, what's his name? The Al-Qaeda leader, Bin Laden. He was opposed to Trump's killing Soleimani. So if that's where he is on foreign policy issues, then you can bet he doesn't understand that Iran is the head of the snake, that we are still in a fight against terrorism, and that unless the United States supports the Israelis in dealing with this terror threat from Hamas, which is a proxy from Iran, then what's going on with this? It just seems to me that Biden, and you can figure for yourselves what's driving this. I mean, is it his past connections with the Israeli leadership in the past that's driving this, or is it just a leftover animus towards Netanyahu because of the Iran nuclear deal, or is it just the fact that he's got a problem with his own pro-Hamas wing of the Democratic Party, Tlaib and all the rest of them? And that turns into American election politics are driving his foreign policy. There's no reason why Biden shouldn't have jumped on this and gone full throttle to support the Israelis. Now, at the Holocaust Museum earlier this week, he was talking about how our support is ironclad. And all the mouthpieces in the administration are talking about ironclad. Well, how the hell can it be ironclad when they were slow walking on Tuesday, and now they have stopped the ammunition they need? Now, they have said they're going to support the self-defense for the, you know, Iron Dome and all like that, which is, that's fine. But, I mean, how in the world could he walk away from that? But be that as it may, here you have a situation where, again, this combination of American politics linked to, you know, Biden's past problems with the Israeli leaders may very well be clouding, you know, his judgment. Because the fact of the matter is, the Israelis must do what they have to do in order to get Hamas taken care of. And I would argue, but at this point, that if Biden can't see that because of American politics and the fear that he's not going to win his re-election, which let's hope he doesn't, but if that's what's driving this, then shame on him, because once again, his failure to understand foreign policy, his failure to not grasp that this war on terror is not over, okay? And that being the case, it just seems like we've got someone in the White House who just doesn't get it. And, of course, I'm sure all of y'all are saying out there, you're right, he doesn't get it. You know, and what are we going to do? Well, what we can do is put pressure on him through your senators and through your congressmen to do what we have to do to make sure that that he at least does not walk away from the Israelis. You know, I mean, it's interesting how when I say he doesn't get it, when you think about this, when's the last time you heard anyone from the administration talk about the names of the American hostages that are still left in Gaza? I haven't heard their names. You never hear it, okay? So once again, we get back to some fundamental questions, okay? And here again, he left Americans in Afghanistan when they pulled out in 21. Couldn't care less. Just wanted that headline that says the Americans have pulled out of Afghanistan, the war is over. Well, it may have been over for some, but it certainly wasn't over for those Americans who were left there, number one, and it certainly wasn't left, you know, the Afghanis that supported us were left in the lurch, so it wasn't over for them. But nevertheless, this is the kind of individual who has no real understanding. And if he's willing to leave American hostages, you know, in Gaza for all this time, what does that say? And of course, you know, here again, as I've said to you all before, as far as I'm concerned, when it comes to the hostages, especially after the Israelis were able to penetrate Iranian airspace at will, the correlation of forces are in our favor. And if you had Trump in there and these hostages were still there, well, they wouldn't still be there, but Trump, I would argue, would have told the Iranians, get Hamas to let our hostages go or else. You know, and killing Soleimani is a classic example of where, you know, Trump comes down when it comes to dealing with threats. So you've got Biden at this point not doing anything when it comes to our hostages. Or let's put it this way. If anything is going on, it's under the table, sub rosa, okay? But the fact of the matter is, this isn't something that should be going on behind closed doors. It needs to be out in public, and it needs to be a major deal for the Americans. We can't just close our eyes and wish for the best with this. So we're kind of right back to the head of the snake argument. How in the world do you expect to see terrorism in the world curtailed to the point where you could live with it? Well, I mean, as long as the Iranians are able to fund it, and they can now, thanks to Biden and all the money that he's turned over to them, as we've talked about, as long as that's the case, then this terror business is going to go on. So once again, right back to first questions. What to do about the Iranians who support all of this? I mean, do you really think that having the nuclear deal is going to stop them from getting the bomb? It never did. Never did. And yet, Biden and them are fixated on this. And then they've got people in the administration who are part of a spy system dealing with the Iranians. So none of this makes sense. None of it. And I would argue at this particular time that we have got to do something about it and support the Israelis as much as we can and stop tying their hands behind their back in terms of dealing with Rafah and taking out Hamas. And like I've said, in my view, the Israelis should have just gone to the head of the snake right after they found out that they could penetrate Iranian air and do whatever they wanted to do. So we shall see how this works out. But I still argue that we need to have a head of the snake strategy, and that's what we should be doing. All right. Let's take a look at some of the lessons that came out of the recent student protests. And they're really not student protests. I mean, after the dust has settled, 50% of all these people who were, you know, arrested were not students. Oh, well, what does that mean? Okay, what's the lesson here? Well, the clear lesson is that in the end, you've got all of these major Biden billionaire donors who are part of the Democratic establishment supporting the Democratic Party. And what are they doing? Well, let's put it this way. As it pertains to the so-called student uprising, pro-Hamas uprising, what you have is people like Soros, who have donated to various foundations that funnel money into the organizations doing what? Training the so-called students. And using those, and I think I mentioned it last time, this lady who's been, you know, on TV a lot and caught back in Ferguson, Missouri, when we had all of that. She's a professional agitator. This is who they supply money to, who then, that kind of person goes and produces videos for training the students on how to do things. So when you look at this from the standpoint of just the protests, what you end up finding is a cabal of people who are anti-American, anti-Israeli, and determined to use the students for their own political purposes. Okay? Now, step back from this and look at it from 30,000 feet, and what you have is the same people involved with the World Economic Forum, the Davos Group, doing all the kinds of things that they want to do and supporting all the things that they want to do, which essentially includes, you know, less population, climate change, you know, a one world government, you know, the UN controlling everything. That's what all this is. So superimposed on the protest is this greater cabal of people who are doing exactly what we have seen over the last 12 years. And that really starts with Obama fundamentally changing America, Obama moving in the direction that allows people like Soros to send money to get prosecutors elected who don't prosecute, who want to change the justice system to make it so-called more just, but that means the criminals get a pass on everything they do. So you have this situation that has arisen over time that basically makes it very difficult for us to see how this is going to end in a good way when you've got all of these billionaires, and again, Soros, the Rockefellers, Pritzker, Zuckerberg, all of these people are involved with this. And here we are, you know, trying to stem the tide, and to a very large degree, if Biden is somehow reelected and these progressive radicals are allowed to continue to do what they're doing, it's not an overstatement to say that this country, as we knew it and as we grew up, is over, because they do not want a small d democracy. They want to control everything, and they are on the track to do that. So if that's the view from 20,000 feet or 30,000, how do we get ourselves to deal with the student aspects of the protests that we saw? Well, part of the problem is all of the federal money that goes to these universities. Columbia is getting $1.2 billion, Yale $776 million, Cornell $736 million, Harvard $676 million. I mean, these places have huge endowments. I think Harvard has a $40 billion endowment. So I understand that a lot of this goes for research, but guess what? As we all know, federal dollars comes with federal control. So if we're going to have some sense of direction from the feds telling the universities anti-Semitism has to be stopped, you cannot tolerate this. And this is something the House under GOP control can start working on, along with defunding some of these stupid places like, you know, the Department of Education. I mean, that's really where the deep state is going to be taken care of. You defund these places, and with a new Trump government, I think you'll see that. But the point here is, use the funding to leverage the issue of anti-Semitism. And of course, you know, Biden, in his little three-minute talk, as we said last week, you know, he has a moral equivalency here with Islamophobia. I'm sorry. This just isn't the issue. Anti-Semitism is on the rise, and it needs to be curtailed. So that would be a lesson learned and something that we should really attempt to try to get on top of if we are serious about this. And I think that it's incredibly important to do it. As we talked about last week, these issues are part and parcel of a bigger issue. And so the longer this is allowed to fester and just allowed to grow in terms of this anti-Semitism, the worse it's going to be. The other lesson that I think came out of this whole business was make sure that when you have these protests erupt, and once again, these are not organic student-led things. These things were planned. There's nothing spontaneous about it. So for these university presidents to just sit back and say, oh, we've got to negotiate, we've got to talk to them, we're going to play that game. No, you don't talk to them. You don't do what so many of them did at Columbia and other places, George Washington. You do what people in Florida did and what happened in Texas and UNC. You shut it down right away. That's the lesson. So we'll see what happens with that. Okay, but I do think that, you know, getting the school's attention by showing them how much money they're getting and basically saying, look, if you can't figure out what you have to do to maintain control over your school, then we'll lend a helping hand with you. You either shut this stuff down or you're not getting any federal money for anything, you know? So that's my two cents on that particular thing. Lessons learned. All right, so I've got a little bit of time left. So let's talk about what's going on with Trump and his trials. Now, all week long we've had Stormy Daniels to talk about, and I mean, for one of these CNN guys to talk about her as, I mean, he painted a picture of her as a saint, you know, in black, as a nun, you know, with her hair tied up in the back like she's, you know, just a normal person, a normal woman going to shop or something like that, okay? I mean, Stormy Daniels certainly is no saint. Not that I'm going to proclaim sainthood for myself or for any of you. But I do think that we rise above where Stormy Daniels was, and I think that's important. But the fact of the matter is, you've got her in such a way, you're painting this picture of her in such a way that is completely at odds with reality. But nevertheless, the important part of it is the things that she said during her testimony. All of this was irrelevant, according to the various legal analysts that you listen to. All of it's irrelevant. And yet, the judge let it go. The defense people said, we want a mistrial. He says no to that. And so he lets her go on again yesterday, and they find out that she's communicating with the dead through seances. And you have to ask yourself, you know, what is going on? So one could argue that as far as the Trump trial in New York over manipulation of business records in order to interfere with the election, that seems to be going nowhere. Now, whether or not Michael Cohen is going to be an even worse disaster for the prosecution when they bring him on, we'll see. But, I mean, if Stormy Daniels turned out to be a major disaster, just think about what Michael Cohen is going to, you know, do when he is cross-examined by Trump's team, which is pretty adept at just picking apart these people that the prosecution is, you know, putting on the stand. I mean, I'm certainly glad for this. I mean, there's the hope. Well, let's put it this way. I think there is a hope that the jury even gets it, even though, you know, they're handpicked, you know, and are disposed towards, you know, the Democrats. I get that. But there are two lawyers on this jury, and perhaps they can rise above their political, you know, leanings to do the right thing. So we'll see how that works out. But if the if this particular New York trial, you know, is anything that we thought it was going to be, I think the danger to Trump is lessening every day, and we'll see how this goes with Cohen on the stand. But clearly they're having trouble with this. The next thing here is the Florida trial. Now, this is the one where Mar-a-Lago was raided. And you may remember seeing pictures of classified, what they call them, classified sheets of paper over certain documents, okay? Well, come to find out that the judge has found that the evidence that the FBI collected has been tainted. Some of those, you know, classified contact sheets were actually put on pieces of evidence, on the evidence that was collected. Other aspects of this created a situation for the judge where she said, look, we're postponing this trial, postponing it while we sort this out. So you have this evidentiary problem, the chain of custody, who did what to what. I mean, this is another problem for the prosecution, all to the good. And of course, the big problem is, and I think the judge is correct, on the one hand, Biden walks on mishandling classified information, but Trump, who was in contact with the archive people from January through June, and they had disagreements about things, but this is completely different. And yet, they're going forward? It makes absolutely no sense. Then, of course, you've got this other issue with whether or not the January 6th trial is going to go. Well, here we have a situation where that's tied up with SCOTUS, because the Supreme Court is trying to decide whether or not there's the question of immunity here. So we see that these Trump trials are are doing the only thing that they perhaps thought that they could do, which is to keep them off the trail. Can't keep them off the campaign trail as long as they can. But even that is backfiring on them because the poll numbers are going up. Everyone sees what's going on. So when you take all of this into account, what do you get? You get a pretty mixed bag of how this is just backfiring on them because everything is screwed up for them, which is all to the good. I mean, that's that. Well, I've got about a minute and 30 on my clock. Lori, we doing okay on the clock?
Yeah, a couple more minutes.
Okay. Let me wind up talking about Speaker Johnson and what's happened with his latest attempt to try to get, you know, override him and remove him like they did McCarthy. I think that on the one hand, I can understand Marjorie Taylor Greene's point. Johnson promised that he would do something about the border. The leverage they had was the desire on the part of the Democrats and Biden to have money going to Ukraine. So when he didn't do what he said he was going to do, Marjorie Taylor Greene and other members of the Freedom Caucus said it's important, it's too important not to take care of the border, and I cannot disagree with that, okay? The only thing that I would argue that Johnson felt the importance of the Ukraine business has to do with stopping Putin, sending that message that this will not stand, that the use of force against Ukraine cannot be tolerated. And it's important that we have that line in the sand saying to Putin, this far and no further. Make him pay a price greater than what he's paid for what he's done. And so if that's Johnson's calculation, then I have to agree with that, okay? But I don't like the fact that he didn't tie up, you know, any money to Ukraine with doing something on the border. So he was saved by the Democrats, which is not a good thing. But I do think that I think Johnson is smart enough and capable enough to turn this thing around and get himself on track and get the Republicans to do what's necessary to end this border crisis by leveraging the money that they have. So we'll see how it goes. Well, Lori, I've got 32 minutes on mine, so I can wrap this up at this point, but I do think that it's been a very interesting week. But here we are looking at, you know, more problems down the road, especially with Israel, if Biden should somehow decide that that the Israelis are not going to get the kind of support they need. So we'll see how it goes. I'll be with you all next week. Lori, thank you once again.
Dr. Lou, thank you as well. We appreciate your input. You've been listening to the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou, former president of the Common Sense Campaign, adjunct professor of political science. This program is paid for by an anonymous donor. The opinions and views expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station or management. If you missed part of the program, we will post it on our website, wabf1480.com. Now resuming regular programming.